It's a little bit before 4 o'clock on KDNK. I am Will with the Soper Sun, bringing you, just starting a little bit early here, Everything Under the Sun, a little half-hour news segment that we do every week, talking about things going on in the Soper Sun. With me in the studio is Marilyn Murphy, our board president. Hey, Marilyn.
Hi, Will. Hello, everybody.
Thanks for joining us. We're waiting on Megan Tackett, our reporter, who I see pulling up right now, so she'll be in a second. We did start a little early, so we won't give her crap for being late today. But before we get going, I just want to take a moment to acknowledge the passing of two really prominent members of our community. Wally DeBeck, the grandson of one of the instrumental founders of the town, and himself a pillar of the community, who owned the Dingle Building for many years and was just a fountain of knowledge about this place in a time that most of us can't even really fathom. And then Fred Haberlane, Lightning Heart, who was, in addition to being a really accomplished muralist and the consistent person to start the Mountain Fair, also just a really great guy who I remember about a year ago came up to me at an event and handed me a rock and acknowledged, said, "You're doing a great job with the paper. This is a token of somebody who's really a token of my esteem, basically." And I think that, at least to me, kind of sums up his spirit and what he brought to this community. So anyone who wants to honor either of those people or somebody else, please give us a call, 963-2976. This is a call-in show, and I think if you have a story about one of those folks or somebody else who we've lost in this community, I'd love to have somebody share them. Megan Tackett, thank you for joining us in the studio today.
Happy to be here.
Reporter. So we got all the bases covered. And I think, Marilyn, since we've got you here, let's talk. We just got back from the Colorado Press Association convention. How'd you guys like that?
Well, I had a great time. I mean, it was really a good opportunity for me to meet a lot of people in the same industry that we are. Of course, we're not an industry. We're a nonprofit. And I got to hear a lot about their passions and how they started their careers in the news business. And I really enjoyed everything about it. So it was very informative. It was nice to talk to everybody and get out of town for a weekend with my the staff of the Soper Sun and another board member who I got to know quite a bit better after our little pajama party.
I know. I love getting to know everybody in a different setting. You know, it was great.
Yeah. For those who don't know, which is probably pretty much every listener, we got a little Airbnb on the edge of town and we sent really quite a large contingent, a lot of papers. The Post-Independent had one person there. This was our first chance to participate in the Colorado Press Association convention, because we only joined last year. And so other than myself, who had been for the Post-Independent, it was a new experience for everybody. It was both a sort of a building experience for the staff in all the seminars and workshops that they put on. It was also our chance to claim some awards. We took first place in our size category for two photo awards for Jane. One was her photography portfolio, which is just her general, all-around work. Another was for a photo essay she did on the Carbondale Wild West Rodeo. Mark Burrows took second place with a photo he took of KDNK women's arm wrestling, and I shared credit with Footsteps Marketing for our website, which, as anybody who listens frequently probably knows by now, we had a pretty good overhaul back at the beginning of February, and we're really quite proud of what we're doing. So, in addition to the workshops, what did you guys, was it like to sit there and hear these names listed off and hear the Soper Sun among them?
Oh, that was so much fun. That was so much fun. I loved that.
Yeah, that was great because we were a large contingent, as Will said, and we were vocal at that point. So we were just jumping up and down, so happy and surprised. Everybody else was kind of polite about their awards, but not us. So that was great.
We were definitely the noisy Carbondale contingent, and I hope we didn't embarrass. We kind of befriended the Rio Blanco Herald Times in our time there, another small Western Slope paper, and got to hang out with them. And over the course of things, they were a little more subdued with their own wins than we were. So hopefully we didn't embarrass them in that process.
What do you mean, kind of befriended, Nikki, Caitlin? If you're listening, we befriended.
I don't know that Nikki and Caitlin are listening, but Ethan might be out there somewhere, you know, judging how we portray his family. So they've got a lot of folks out here. I'm curious because, you know, I can go on and on, but in addition to just the vibe, did you guys learn anything in particular? Did you go to a seminar that really spoke to you about the value of journalism or the way that we conduct ourselves in a community?
Well, kind of what you and I have talked about in the newsroom, right, is it's just so easy to kind of fall into your habits. And as I get to know your editing style, I know that I could probably tailor my writing style to that. And I'm sure there's a little vice versa. And just, okay, you're cranking something out, you got deadlines. And it was just so nice to sit down in a room and really reflect, even when you and I were in the same room together, and be able to reflect and kind of like show, like, you know, share knowing looks of, okay, no, we could freshen this up, or, oh, you know, it's worth it to think about your word choice in this, or have I thought about reaching out to this kind of peripheral source for a story? So I really, really enjoyed that. And I also, there was another one that I think I was the only one that, well, no, you and Nicolette were the reporting politics in an era of fake news. I loved that because I thought I knew what that was going to be about, and it wasn't at all.
Right.
He basically came in and said, in an era of fake news, it's an opportunity for us as journalists to be beyond reproach, to remember that there's a place for compassion in the field, and really made the whole thing kind of more about ethics in journalism. And I really loved that.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that particular one. And also, in the era of fake news, I was impressed with all of the presenters and, you know, other people that were attending in their really high values that they place on ethics and, you know, how careful we try to be and how aware, hyper aware almost, especially now as the news sources are so expanded beyond just, you know, our little newspaper. But in our case, I reinforced that it's so important to have, you know, an accurate and timely way to keep up with your small town business and activities, which you do so well here at the Soper Sun. And I was very happy and proud to think about that.
Well, thank you. You know, I'm curious, Marilyn, as a board member, you know, Megan and I, we have our counterparts at other papers. We're staff. Our jobs are more or less similar to what a for-profit might do, even if we're taking somewhat of a different, you know, perspective from it. Did you find that there was information that worked for what you do, what your position is with the paper? Or were you sort of kind of one of a kind at that event?
Well, I was sort of one of a kind because as a nonprofit, I think we're the only nonprofit newspaper in Colorado. Is that correct?
To my knowledge. There's stuff like Aspen Journalism that are doing nonprofit work, but in terms of just putting out a weekly newspaper on a nonprofit basis, I don't know of many comparable.
And a lot of people were aware of our status as a nonprofit newspaper and had seen, I guess, a big article, maybe national or in the Denver Post when we first came out.
I think the Post did something, and I think the LA Times did something.
Right, LA Times.
El Mundo, too.
So, you know, they wanted to know about that. And I said, well, you know, I'm relatively new to the board, relatively, and I see our role as sort of a publisher, you know, like we're kind of responsible for finances and whatnot and fundraising and things like that. So they were very interested in that. I mean, most we rely heavily, of course, on ads. I'm losing my voice. On ad sales. But we also rely on, of course, community support and donations. So that was different for them. And, you know, gave me a chance to think about that on a different level.
Well, yeah, I'm curious, Marilyn, because, you know, and I'm assuming that people are familiar with you in the community, but not necessarily in this context. Megan and I, we go out, we get recognized to some extent for our role with the paper. Have you ever been recognized as being part of the Soap or Sun? And then also, what should people know about you that maybe aren't familiar with you from your years in the Valley?
Well, I was your librarian here at the Gordon Cooper Library for 20 years before I retired. And so I do know a lot of people here. And that was like a perfect job because I've known people through their pregnancies, babies. Now they're all those kids are in high school or out of school and whatnot. And that's one element of the community that I really appreciate. As I also got to know a cross-section of the community because, you know, the library offers a lot of entertainment and, you know, free books and movies and a website that's really quite advantageous to students and all kinds of things like that. So in my time at the library, I've done some promoting. I've done quite a bit of promoting the library, and also I did some fundraising for them because, you know, the library never has any money. And we used to do programming and you know, go out into the local community and just seek help with that. So, yeah. And then as far as the Soap or Sun, I'm surprised that so many people read the, what do you call that? This little...
The masthead.
The masthead. And when my name appeared there, I thought, wow, people come up to me all the time in the grocery store and talk about that. So that's been really nice too.
That's good to hear. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's very cool. You know, I am often surprised at the things that I think, I'm putting so much effort into this and somebody's just going to skim it. And then, you know, 2 weeks ago, I scuttlebutted something that Megan did a story on this week, and got all kinds of feedback on it. Or actually didn't scuttlebutt, it was in the town report. And heard all about it. So it's nice to know that people are paying attention. It's a good sign.
Yeah.
By the way, this is Katie and Kay, commercial-free since 1983. Underwriting on Katie and Kay is an effective way to market your business. Reach your friends and neighbors in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond with Katie and Kay's reasonable underwriting packages. Email greg@katieandkay.org. You're listening to Everything Under the Sun, our little news half hour here with the staff and today the board of the Soap or Sun. Marilyn Murphy has joined us in the studio, Megan Tackett with me as well, and I'm Will Grandbois. Marilyn, I know you're losing your voice, so you are welcome to skip out as we continue, or you're welcome to pipe in. I did, since we sort of had a reference there. Megan, tell me about the story you did do about the not official Pickens County affordable housing program.
Yes. That was a fun one because I remember we were so confused. I'm making all these phone calls to Pickens County about this new affordable housing project on Dolores Way in Carbondale, and they thought I had lost my mind. but no, there is a company. It's called the Aspen Pickens County Employee Housing Inc. They bought a pretty sizable land parcel. It was more than 1,100 acres out over by Dolores Way. And they are looking to build an affordable housing community. And what I found really interesting was I kind of went in thinking I was going to like tiss them a little bit for the play on words in the name of their company. But then I was the one really taken to task. They're a nonprofit entity. They came first before the Housing Authority. They've been around since 1978 and very much came about with that mission of, wait a minute, as the Valley is growing and there's an increase in wealth disparity, is attainable housing really truly attainable? And so they created this whole nonprofit entity with experts. They have an attorney on their board. They've got architects, landscapers, and they, for the first time, are venturing down into Carbondale. So they bought this parcel back in September and have been just planning ever since. They've got a whole application ready to present to the PNZ on May 10th. There will be a public hearing, so if you want to learn more about that. And I'll tell you, Will, you and I were chatting about some of the rates that they're talking about. I think people should be interested because they're really reasonable.
This isn't $2,000 studio affordable housing. You can't see my air quotes, but I'm doing my best there. This is, I mean, what are we looking at for like a one bedroom? According to the standard category one rates
that they're looking at as the absolute max. They really are trying to ensure that rates will be below this threshold. But the one bedroom you mentioned would only be $1,057 a month. The studio would be $980 a month to be right on Dolores Way. You've got access to the Rio Grande Trail. You've got Rafta's park and ride right there, which was a huge thing for them, too. They really wanted to make sure that in finding the site for the community, that there would be readily available public transportation. So I spoke at length, actually, with the executive director of that organization, Sherry Sanzone, and she really emphasized that, you know, the thinking there isn't just affordable housing. Yes, we know that the Valley struggles with affordable housing. You can't go anywhere without hearing those buzzwords, but they really want a community. So the current design is essentially two buildings that are linked by open space. They've got a community garden that they're planning, a bike repair site. I mean, they really, storage, there was a big emphasis on storage for people's toys. So all five pairs of my skis, I would in theory be able to store. And they recognize that they want to create a community for the people who live here. And that means respecting the lifestyles of that people value here as well. So I'm excited for it. I'm looking forward to, I'll probably pop into that PNZ meeting on May 10th because I'm curious how it goes.
Yeah. You know, in this community, nothing's ever a done deal. So you know, I can feel your enthusiasm there, but I will not be surprised to see some pushback as well. You know, there's neighbors there. There's a, you know, the first thing I heard from the people when I put it out there in the town report was, how are we going to deal with that traffic at that intersection with Dolores Way and 133, which is consistently passed over for any sort of roundabout, stoplight, anything. Mm-hmm. And it's the only way in and out. You know, that's not a loop. That's not a connection.
Right.
That's one of the questions that I'm sure will be raised.
Oh, yeah. And it's so preliminary. Even if there was no pushback, if everything was smooth sailing, they got the funding and the affordable housing tax credit and everything that they want, we're still talking, you know, spring of 2019 before they're really breaking ground.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's an interesting issue. It's one that I can assure you we'll be continuing to cover. I ran a poll, actually it's still running online right now, on our website about affordable housing, started getting feedback about questions like, what is a fair rate to ask for a one-bedroom apartment? How much of your income are you spending every month on living? You know, some people, you know, I've heard that, oh, you should be spending about a third. I don't think anyone in this valley is hitting that number. I think most people, at least based on that survey, are a lot closer to 50% or higher.
That is so scary. I mean, I remember when I was young, it was the rule of thumb was you paid 1 week's salary out of the month for housing.
Oh, wow.
And that's, you know, that's heartbreaking.
I can't imagine.
Really. And especially for like yourself, Will, and my sons that grew up here, you know, and they can't get into the housing market at this point because it's just too expensive.
It's tough. And I will point out, if you are listening and feeling impassioned about this, there is a regional housing needs assessment that's available online at regionalhousingsurvey.org/open. And so, you know, they are gathering information that could lead to, the research could lead to ballot measures and things in the future. So if you are listening and thinking, wait, I want my voice heard on that, I invite you to go to that website.
Yep, that's a great thing to do. Megan, the other story, let's get into something a little lighter this week. I sent you off to the Mountain Fair selection.
You thought
I was going in a different direction.
I was like, is that light?
No, I think this is a fun one. I know I'm getting ahead of myself. Five Point is this weekend. That's the big event. But Mountain Fair around the corner always, you know, lots of people thinking about it. Tell me about your experience in the t-shirt choosing meeting over at Amy Kimberly's place.
Well, I think I said in my lead, I kind of felt like I was going to a secret society meeting or something. Like I was not one of the cool kids and somehow I got to be one for a night. No, it was a lot of fun. And thank you so much for thinking of that story angle, because at this point, you know, okay, Mountain Fair, yes, it happens. And everyone in this town, I think I can confidently say pretty much everyone in this town knows that Mountain Fair happens. So it was a fun angle to really look at the behind the scenes of how that comes together. And realizing that, yeah, no, it's the planning begins months in advance. And it was so amazingly fundamentally Carbondale to me. And I mean that in the most lovely way possible. You know, having been in the agency world down on the Front Range for years, in the past, my experience with branding an event like this and choosing the posters and t-shirt designs and things, you know, the organizing entity establishes the budget, it establishes the need, it puts out an RFP, a request for proposal, it compares bids, and then it chooses the agency that they're going to move forward with. And then you just exchange change orders until everybody's happy and it's just a done deal and you pay the invoice and you're set. That was absolutely not how this happens. And I love that because it was, you know, this is the 47th Mountain Fair we're talking about. We're coming up on half a century of Mountain Fair. And yet it is still, you know, Amy Kimberly's house and about 20 people crowded around the projector comparing options as it's projected on the screen in her living room. And she's got, you know, the buffet style of snacks and people sitting up on stairs and sharing couches. And, you know, everyone's got their slips of paper and ranking everything. Mm-hmm. And even the questions on the ballots, quote unquote, was also reflective of the whole process and how much thought goes into it. Because on the one hand, you know, you had this question of, is this design bringing something fresh and unique in terms of its perspective? And then the very subsequent question was, is this design reflective of what has been successful in the past? And somebody rightly pointed out, wait a minute, aren't these contradictory? And should we scratch off the past and focus more on the fresh perspective? But that's how much thought goes into this. And I was so thrilled at the end, Bonnie Barker ended up winning. Her submission won, although it was just a concept. It's just a rough sketch. In years past, they've considered complete designs. And I guess subsequently, everybody wants to go in with those proverbial change orders. And that's really frustrating for the artist who already submitted a complete submission. So this time around, they just asked for rough sketches that could be points of collaboration with Carbondale Arts to kind of settle together on the final design. But it was not Bonnie's first submission. So everybody kind of agreed that it was right that she won it. And yeah, it was really fun. It was social, but serious and clearly tradition, but also new aspects as they continue to move forward and listen to the artist community in the process. I thought it was great.
Great. Okay, so then next, the story you thought I was leading into, which is kind of, you know, I was talking about the bright side. There's some bright sides to this. There's a reason to celebrate, sides. But the fundamental need is a, you know, a concerning one and one that we often don't address. So River Bridge Regional Center having its fundraiser in about a week and a half.
Yeah, April 28th.
And then some informational sessions in the meantime. What did you discover talking to them?
Yeah, I was looking forward to really featuring River Bridge. I first got to know River Bridge months ago when they took on administering the SANE program that we talked about. And that was, I got to peripherally get to know River Bridge, but the focus of that was really the SANE program. And I always felt like they were the ones that got away from me as a reporter. I really felt like the work that River Bridge does as a child advocacy center is so important. And what better time to really highlight that work than in the lead up to their annual fundraiser? You know, I couldn't believe the need. It's so easy to fall into this narrative that everywhere in this valley is so warm and fuzzy and nothing bad ever happens. But bad things do happen because the number of forensic interviews alone that center has had to facilitate has grown like 180%. I mean, they did more than 200 interviews with children in 2017, which is the most recent year of data. And, you know, they're expanding. The county, Garfield County, just recently purchased them a building just across the street from their current headquarters. And, you know, the entire staff is thrilled about that because one of the things that they place so much emphasis on is privacy and, you know, maintaining and remembering the humanity and dignity of families who were going and talking about arguably one of their worst nightmares. And there are other things that are happening. They also facilitate mental therapy and just general checkups. And those things don't need to interact with the much more vulnerable, tender forensic interview. And so having a second building that to separate those things is just going to be so wonderful for them in enabling them to continue providing that level of privacy. And also just the environment. Unfortunately, we did talk, it didn't make it into the story, but we did speak quite a bit about how awful it is being an adult that's been assaulted or, you know, has gone through something traumatic or witnessed a violence, because it's just so cold. The whole process is so cold. And, you know, you add childhood into that equation. And if you don't have a child advocacy center like Riverbridge, you're also going through that similarly cold experience of having to report to multiple different agencies with the glass and the hard plastic chairs, and you're surrounded by other people. And it's amazing what Riverbridge has been able to accomplish just in the environment alone, having teddy bears and couches that, you know, mirror what could be a living room. And they've got Frasier, their now, I think, relatively famous facility dog. Mm-hmm. And there's just so much care. I mean, they've managed to bring the dog to the court so that when the kid is testifying and having to face his or her offender, there's a sweet little Labrador golden retriever mix at their feet that's not witnessed. You know, the jury can't see them, but that dog is there. Mm-hmm. And there's only 3 centers like that in the state that service the Western Slope. So we are so lucky that we have them in our backyard. And I just think they're a wonderful cause. And I really appreciated getting to share their story and their work a bit.
Great. So we got about 3 minutes left here. Before I talk about my stories, I do want to recognize there are 2 stories from members of our board and 2 freelance stories in this week's paper. As we noted, we're at the Colorado Press Association conference, spent our weekend real busy, came back, and everybody really stepped up. This is a community newspaper, and Megan and I cannot make it happen all on our own. Megan and Jane and I cannot make it happen all on our own. It is a collaborative effort, and I really feel that this particular issue illustrates that wonderfully. So if you see any of those people, please read the bylines. And these are people you know. I guarantee that you know somebody who contributed a piece of content to this week's paper. Let them know. Let them know you appreciate it and give us some feedback. I have to say, you know, with no offense at all to Aaron Taylor and the Bonedale Bike Project, which is having an open house this weekend, or to Pages of the Past and, you know, 10 years since we had a pretty good spring fire down here on the floodplain. The story that was really close to my heart this week was Gary Knaus. And I was lucky enough, he was actually receiving his Family Physician of the Year for Colorado award in Colorado Springs at the same time that we were there for the Press Association. So I had the privilege of sort of crashing that party, kind of to his chagrin. I hope he'll forgive me for it. But you know, the man has been my doctor since before I was born, and I was really pleased to be able to show up to listen to him be introduced, to hear him speak. And I think that what he brought to the table, some of the issues he raised, are really something that maybe we as patients haven't been aware of. Because we know Roaring Fork Family Practice makes an effort to be a local, house call giving, institution. We don't necessarily see how the background of their jobs have changed over the years, and all of the metrics and systems that they're part of that make things, I don't know about more difficult, you'd have to ask them, but certainly more complex and different from the way things started. To hear that they're really making an effort to take care of themselves, to find the things that feed their souls and remind them why they wanted to be doctors in the first place and what that's all about, that was meaningful to me, because I have, you know, always kind of felt like I got to go to the doctor and have that experience, from from days of yore, and I'm not sure everybody gets that. I don't know about you guys.
That has not been my experience.
So. Well, Dr. Knaus and his associates have always taken care of us and my children, and, you know, they've always been caring and wonderful, and just we're so lucky to have them as a resource here in the town.
And I think that's a class act of Dr. Knaus to use his speech time to reference what probably some people in the audience would have considered a surprising detail about the industry in general and its direction. I think that's cool. And thanks for highlighting it.
Sure thing. So, you know, there's a whole lot more in this week's paper. I am trying to hit this very precise time in terms of when we're supposed to start the new content, because we will not be having the veterinary thing happening. When it sounds like those folks are out sick. Hopefully they're connecting with Gary themselves and getting better. But I'm reading this clock right, and I'm gonna start this up. Forgive me if it's a bit of a hiccup. And thanks for tuning in to Everything Under the Sun, Megan and Marilyn. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for joining me over the weekend in the Springs. All right, here we go.